It's time, baby. Conference final time. A nice crisp crack for all the members of the Big Dog Ball Talk Dog Pound out there. Matt Edwards. Oof. Jordan Flegel.
You're hiding that one from me.
He's got a friend over here. We'll see if he shows up.
Oh, okay. Here we go.
But it's Big Dog
Ball Talk. Is that a light beer? Matt, you're watching the calories.
No, I know, but this long weekend, shout out to all the Canadians out there. I don't know if America,
Victoria.
Do you guys have a May 2-4? This is just us?
No, they don't. I think it's Memorial Day, maybe next weekend or coming up soon for them. But as the stock markets were open today in the U.S., I know that there was not a holiday there. But yeah, Victoria Day up here. Nice vibey day. I had to work anyway, but still fun.
Whack. But May 2-4 is actually a very, I would put it in the calendar of Canadian holidays. Like, it's up there, like top three. Like, it's underrated. Very underrated.
It's awesome. For unofficial start to summer, it's actually nice to go outside.
Weather sucked this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, it hasn't been great. Comparably, though, you know, there's leaves on the trees and the grass has grown. So that feels good. But yeah, love May 2-4. I heard some fireworks last night. Too bad the motherfucking Leafs ruined my whole last approximately 12 hours. But what else is new, I guess? I mean, that comes around just as often as Victoria Day every year, sort of on the negative side of things. But
Victoria Day. Again, maybe one day Big Dog Puck Talk will drop and we can have a whole Leaf segment. It's going to be a crazy summer for those crazy guys out there in Toronto. Mitch Marner, Tavares, both free agents. Matthew Nyes, restricted free agent. Nine straight playoff runs. They pushed the defending cup champions, maybe the favorites to win the whole thing, to seven games. You could have been up 3-0. In the series, I think that a lot of those guys on the Panthers, Paul Maurice, the coach there, Brad Marchand even said it himself, it's a good team. Don't think you guys need to fucking ruin it, but I guarantee that they're going to blow it up this offseason.
Oh, yeah.
But as hockey deals with its usual course of Canadian hockey disappointment, I got to say, Jordan, it is getting – it's officially scary hours again. not only because, our season 4 is almost coming to an end here as we, are wrapping up through the NBA playoffs, as we were about to preview the conference frickin' finals. Insane that we're already here. And that's the worst. It's such a bittersweet thing. I say it every year, and I continue to say it because it fills me with dread all year. Like, I look forward to the finals. I look forward to, the biggest games of the year, all the stuff we talk about in the regular season leading up to it. But I don't actually want it to come to fruition because that means that we are so close to having no sports at all, except for fucking baseball, WNBA, maybe some soccer. It really sucks. Like, at least in the summer, you're going outside. You should be going outside, enjoying your life and getting that vitamin D out there. But it does suck because, even like I was thinking today, I'm like, oh, there's nothing on. There's nothing
on
today. I don't even know if there's anything on Monday. I'm sure a lot of you are listening to this on, I don't know, today is Monday. So there's stuff on tomorrow. That's also the long weekend throwing me off there. But yeah, Tuesday, it's just weird not having any sports to watch. Especially, we've been kind of, throughout this playoff run, the NBA, NHL, they've been really pleasuring us with, games every single day.
Okay, great.
Spacing it out. And now I'm just kind of, I'm getting an early taste of what it's going to look like in August when I'm praying for the NFL season, just hurry up and start, maybe even playoff baseball. It's just, yeah, it's the dog days. It's coming, but we are going to appreciate the conference finals and the subsequent NBA finals with all of our hearts because, it was a little early taste today.
Yeah. Luckily, like you said, I mean, even on Saturday, there was no basketball, and I was like, this is weird. I've gotten used to games every damn day here or multiple games. Like, as soon as March Madness comes, it really spoils you. You have all these games all the time, right into the playoffs, basically, all these games all the time. And then, it's like, what the fuck are we going to do? Last year, we had the Olympics. I don't know what the hell. There's not even any. I'm going to have to be searching out illegal streams, and the real dark side of the internet for, some fucking Eurobasket qualifier or something in Lithuania.
Big three, still running.
Whatever I can find. Going to be a super exciting conference final though. I mean, I don't know if we've mentioned it on the podcast. I'm headed out on a trip. So I'm doing for the next couple of weeks, this will be the last one that I do. Matt, you might jump on here solo a little bit, but we're going to preview the conference finals. That's all going to go down. And then probably I'll be back for the final. So all my ironclad takes, they're going to have to stand throughout, you know, whatever happens through these first few games. Mm-hmm. I'm going to have to really sort of put my clairvoyant glasses on here and foresee the future. As I, everyone knows, I'm pretty accurate most of the time.
This year, but, very much so.
But this is a crazy conference final, though. Like, I can't wait to talk about it because it's almost unprecedented. I was thinking about the fact that if OKC lost to Denver, if I told myself when the playoffs started that all three of the 60-win teams in the NBA this year wouldn't make it to the Final Four, I would not have believed myself. So crazy that we almost got there. All four of these teams, none of them with these players, have won a championship, and it's been a while for all of them.
The Knicks are the only team that have ever won out of this organizations. I don't know if you count. Yeah, the 73, I believe, for them. So you're talking over 50 fucking years. You've got the Thunder, who I believe the Supersonics won. But the 79. Thunder have never won. Yeah, the Thunder won. So you can you can technically say they've won a championship before, but at the same time,
and the Pacers have not.
Pacers never.
The Pacers never won, even though they're one of the longest standing organizations. I remember it was like a soundbite in one of the old 2K games that they'd never won, but they won ABA titles for anyone keeping track. And then the Wolves obviously never done it either. But it's gonna be crazy. This is about to be a dogfight.
The four again, if you're not including the Supersonics there and their history with the Thunder, which I will say, I don't really like including it. Like, I do, because it makes sense. Like, it still follows, but it is weird. Like, it's such a big gap. Like, for some reason to me, original Charlotte Hornets to New Orleans Hornets to New Orleans Pelicans, that all flows better in my brain. I don't know what it is, but Supersonics to Thunder just feels like two totally different teams. And then also Jordan, this continues, you know, the parody of the NBA that we are going to have, I believe now for the 7th straight year, a different NBA champion since 2019 with the Raptors. They kickstarted that trend. And then you went Lakers, Bucks, Warriors, Nuggets, and Celtics. And so here we are now with a completely new team, no matter who wins it. This is awesome. For anyone out there who's complaining about that this is the Final Four, doesn't understand, doesn't love basketball the way that we do or understand it, because this is like the diehards. Like, this is for all the dogs out there that are like, that love the game. Yep. Like, these are exciting. Like, this is the changing of the guard. Sorry, LeBron. Sorry, Russ.
It really is.
That the future is here. All these guys. Yeah, this is probably these are conference finals that we could see for the next, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. Like, Anthony Edwards, Tyrese Haliburton, Jalen Brunson, and SGA. Like, for the top young players in the league. And, there's plenty of other guys out there that I'm sure are going to be, jockeying for a top spot here as well. But, you know, without further ado, Jordan, let's get into it. Let's start out West. Let's talk a little bit about that big Game 7 Sunday, 3:30 tip-off, which actually, I know I shit on it a little bit when we recorded last, but that was before, you know, the Leafs had won Game 6, so then we got that Game 7. So then that ended up being nice, because then it was the Game 7 basketball, 3:30. I got to watch that during the afternoon. Dinner, and then Leafs game right after. I was like, this is perfect. So it ended up working out awesome. So, Adam, you did something right, but not really on purpose. but this one, you know, OKC absolutely just dominates, shellacks them, 125-93. Never was really, you know, the first quarter was competitive, but, as the game went on, the Thunder just were the younger team, the healthier legs. They just had more depth and were just going hard on them. On the defensive end, like, Jokic was getting beaten and battered out there, was only able to put up fucking 9 shots from the floor. Like, he was getting absolutely harassed by, Alex Caruso. I know a lot of people were giving him shit for how, the refs were letting him play out there, which, again, I actually like. I like a little bit of physicality. So it was totally fine with me. He was the best Jokic stopper that we've seen in this year's playoffs
since
the
Kat.
Season. Yeah, since Kat. two very likely defensive stoppers for the 7-foot center MVP. But once again, Jordan, this one, it really was just the difference between a top-heavy team and an all-around, spectacular roster here with the Thunder. We got to shout out a couple guys here. Like, Jalen Williams, we said, you got to cut back on the shots. You'd been horrible all series. That guy was clutch. He had that third quarter run by himself to close it out, where he just was on fire defensively, converting on the other end, 25-5-7 to end the game. Shot super efficiently too. Chet was solid, you know, still wasn't as aggressive as, you know, we'd like him to be, but still held it down, did what he had to do. And then SGA was your superstar, carried across the finish line. And then you still had four guys off the bench giving you reliable minutes. I guess it was really three in this one with Caruso, Cason Wallace, and Aaron Wiggins. But this was a great all-around effort from the Thunder. And you look at the side of the Nuggets, like when Jokic can't carry, the team just goes to shit. Russ, horrible game. Peyton Watson, horrible as usual. Strother couldn't find the, you know, the heat that he had kind of found in game six. And then obviously very disappointing finish for him because he had been you know, a hero throughout the entirety of this playoffs, including the series. Aaron Gordon with that, you know, playing through that brutal hamstring issue.
Crazy.
Super sad. That he played. Well, what I saw was he was going to be out for another month. Like it was like if they got to the finals, maybe he'd be back. And then it's like, nope, he's suiting up. He's playing. Aaron Gordon, you are, I actually think, Jared Allen, wherever the Big Dog of the Year trophy is, you have to now give it to Aaron Gordon. I actually would like to change that change right here on the fly.
Well, that's actually crazy that Aaron Gordon's never been brought up. I think him and his camp should be angry about that because, you know, he's not your classic banging big man, but he is 100% definition of what a big dog brings to the table. But yeah, gutsy that he was able to go at all. I was like, fuck, I mean, it's a hamstring. That's what kept Steph out all those games. Like Aaron Gordon, he's so like big and powerful too, the way he jumps. Like if you've got a bad hamstring, like my God. So yeah, props to him for playing, but yeah.
And it was a real injury. Like you could tell, he could not move. Like he was hurting. No. Like he couldn't get like one when they had free throws. They like, he had to be in the other end of the court, 'cause he could not run back and forth in transition. Yeah, huge respects to Aaron Gordon. I'm serious. We're not. Jared Allen's no longer the Big Dog of the Year of 2025.
Let's do it. I mean, we have the power to do this.
Yeah,
we're rescinding. We're rescinding it. Sorry. We're gonna.
Domantas Sabonis. We're gonna go back and watch the tape from last year too. We might have to reallocate that one as well because that one didn't age well either.
We'll take that one away. Give Jared Allen that one. Actually, no. Jared Allen.
Give that one. Give Julius Randle a second one.
That's true. That's true. Back to back. Give it to Julius. We've got to adjust our criteria here. Maybe we should do that every year. If you can win Big Dog during the regular season. If you fucking suck during the playoffs right around now, we're taking it away from you. They should do for all these awards. Which, by the way, this is the MVP series. Still haven't given the fucking thing out, but I think probably I know the votes are in and tallied or whatever, but it'd be fitting if SGA wins it, which we both have, and I think that's what's going to happen. If he's the one who sort of comes out on top, obviously Jokic was pretty spectacular for most of the series. Like if he had even like the things that he's had to deal with this year for, you know, in this series even, but this whole year and this playoff run, I mean, most of the under the hood shit this year was not even as bad as we realized until Mike Malone got fired fucking two days before the regular season ended. And same with their GM. And the fact that Denver, you remember how we were talking about them at the beginning of the year?
Weren't making the playoffs before the season started. Like,
these guys are so shallow. How are they even going to put together anything? Like the fact that they get to the position where they were, hosting a first round series, beating the Clippers, who had every ability to win that series themselves and go and give this 68 win team all they could handle. That's all Jokic. Like I understand Jamal 100%. Murray had a few good games in there. Christian Brown, I've been a big believer in him. And I think he's proven, all of his supporters right this year in taking that next step, like in that MIP conversation. Like he's been great. Sure. You know, Aaron Gordon, like we just talked about, he's been amazing. But again, he's knocked out of here this deciding game, basically unable to be himself. Michael Porter Jr. is dragging around his fucking arm. You have Russell Westbrook, who, again, it's the Russ experience. We're back at the start. I claimed however many podcasts ago, I love Russell Westbrook because he plays all the time. Coming off a great series against the Clippers. And then he goes back to his old self for most of this series. Just god awful, like just giving you nothing. And then, no one off the bench. Like the fact that they got this to seven games is actually, you have to see that as just a feat for Jokic.
Yeah,
and that's 100%. Why I picked it. I mean, even though I wavered going into game seven, I thought, oh, maybe OKC would be a bit, a bit shaky in front of their home fans. That's a lot of pressure. And I thought maybe Jokic could give one more, spectacular game to maybe give the Nuggets a win. At the outset, outset of this series, this is exactly what I predicted. Nuggets maybe being able to push it to seven, but in doing so, they'd have nothing left in the tank and the Thunder would just run them off the floor. Mm-hmm. And like, you just got to look at this Denver rotation and think, if you just had one more vet off the bench, like even one, if you had just kept KCP and that's all you did, could things be different? Could they have been able to close this out? Like, Denver had chances through many of these games to sort of go up and then have that game six at home be the winner of this series. And mm-hmm. like, it's crazy to me, the margins and how much Jokic elevates all these guys. And, you know, credit to the guys who did show up when they did, though. Aaron Gordon, like you said, Brown, and yeah, even Michael Porter Jr. I mean, he had some gutsy performances himself battling through injury. You know, that main core, I think, you know, we've talked about this before. It might have to end up being a Michael Porter Jr. trade out for like a couple pieces in. That might be the only way to sort of rejuvenate this rotation. But mm-hmm. whether you keep him or whether you don't, that like main three, Jokic, Murray, Gordon, and if you want to throw in Porter and Brown in there just for the sake of it, like that formula clearly fucking works. Like, these guys are really good. And they just didn't have enough help. And if they did, I think, you know, you're looking at last year a lot differently, because going into that playoffs, remember, we were like, these are the only guys who could challenge Boston. The fact that they didn't get there because they ran out of gas against the Timberwolves, I think, sort of, you know, sealed the destiny of Boston in that whole playoff run last year, when they had sort of a weak East to go through, and then meeting the Mavericks in the finals, which, you know, were, I think even I would admit that was a bit of a overreach for the Mavs, as good as they were mm-hmm. last year. So like, I know we should probably be talking about the Thunder, and I want to give them their credit too. I'm just looking at Denver, and once again, I'm just very frustrated that Jokic doesn't have a little bit more of sort of, you know, average help, like an average NBA rotation, if they weren't so goddamn shallow. You know, I know you need those top heavy guys as well. You need those, you know, high paid stars to get it done. But just a few more moves on the periphery. If you just let one less guy walk, or made one sort of smarter move, this could be a lot different. But you know, shout out Denver for even getting it there. But also shout out OKC for having the ability to really save that energy and channel that you know, in a deciding game. Like I said here when we previewed it, like, use that home energy to be able to just run out and use your young legs. Dagnall used the guys he trusts, those eight deep that he played, like you mentioned. And so you got to give them credit for getting it done as well.
Yeah. And this is going to be a big off season for the Nuggets. You know, yeah. they still, like, when you look at this roster, they've got about, you know, let me break this down quick. It's about $100 million roped into in annual cap hits just to Jokic, Murray, MPJ and Gordon. And you could still make the argument that that's a four that you can build a championship team around, because we've seen them go all the way. You know, I would assume that...
But not if you can't fill it out more than this.
No, and that's the thing. I mean, but, like, that's the thing. You look at some of these weird contracts they have. Like, I know a lot of people were kind of pulling it up here. Like, Zeke Nnaji, they signed him to that insane, like, four-year deal. He is the fifth highest paid guy on the Nuggets. Is that not fucking nuts? He's making a little bit less this year. This year, he made a little bit less than $9 million. And he didn't even play.
They paid Saric. They've paid Saric as well, who didn't play at all either. Like, it's just ridiculous. But yeah, the Nnaji thing.
He's six. He's the sixth highest paid guy. $5 million.
Yeah. Yep. And you know, those you've had bad luck too, even with your draft picks, like Daron Holmes out of Dayton, who mm-hmm. I really liked when they picked him up, just immediately out for the entire season. Like, I genuinely think if he was able to play, he would have been getting backup big man minutes. So like, you screw up enough of those things. This is sort of the situation you're in, but yeah, the Nnaji one I think is the most egregious. And you know, what do you do? I don't really think you can recoup his value to this team at this point, really. Like, I don't know if you can turn around and sort of make him part of the rotation next year. Like, how many years is it? Do you have his contract up right now? How many years?
This is a fresh contract, dude. He's signed. Oh my God. He has a player option in 2027-28 offseason.
Great. Let's look forward to that.
Like, it's a front loaded deal. So it's most right now, and it's going to keep trickling down and getting less and less. The last 2 years, it's only $7.5 million for a guy who's going to be 27 and has barely touched the NBA floor. His agent is the GOAT. Got to give him that. But yeah, this is a crazy contract that if they can't turn him to at least like a rotational guy is insane to me. Because again, I think they were looking at this one as like, okay, well, we can trade him, we'll build him into a tradable guy. But then again, maybe that's kind of part of you know, the whole Michael Malone discourse that he was having with management, that he wasn't playing the young guys, wasn't building them up. And so a guy like Zeke Nagy, he's not getting minutes. You can't even trade him to that contract you put him on, kind of handcuffing yourself there. So
same with Watson and Strother. I mean, yes, I think they could potentially be more. They could have been more useful to this team if they had more reps during the regular season. But Malone, 100%. You know, he didn't trust him.
Yeah, well, again, we'll see what they do this offseason. There's going to have to be some moves done because, yeah, I don't think that this squad, and I think you've said it as well, it's just not good enough right now to compete with you know, the top creme de la creme in the league, even though Jokic is by far and away the best player on the planet right now. If you don't agree, go argue with the wall. moving on, though, let's talk about the conference finals in the West. We've got the Thunder. And we've got the Timberwolves. My exact prediction from before the season started. Please clap it up for me. Please.
I'm not clapping for you, but other people might want to.
Yes, I'm sure. The raucous applause. probably going nuts. Actually, Jordan, I'm not. If you listen closely right now, oh, there it is. There's the clapping. I think I can hear it, man. That's. I think they're clapping for me. It has to be happening. I think it's happening.
You hear that now, Alex? Yeah. Alex, turn that shit off. Don't
very good.
Don't humor Matt like this. Is that going to be picked up by the listeners?
I hope so. Let's see.
We'll see.
Can they hear it? Oh, they love it. They love it, man. They love it.
There they are.
Everybody loves it.
We do this live, so well done. Glad you're getting your flowers. Fuck
yeah. Let's quiet down, though, crowd. But moving on. Yeah, let's talk about the series. It is going to be a banger of a series. Either SGA getting to his first NBA Finals or Anthony Edwards. Obviously, the Timberwolves. Little more playoff experience, having been in this spot last year. It didn't work out. You know, they kind of got trounced there by the Mavericks. It wasn't a very competitive series, not nearly as competitive as, you know, we kind of envisioned it going. Though I
believe
you
OKC
did pick the Mavericks one. Yeah, that's true. Yep, 100%. But this is a matchup that I think it could go either way. It really could. I feel less confident about the Thunder having watched this Nuggets series, that, you know, coming into the conference finals that I did, coming into the season, coming into the playoffs, like, they are still the best team in this Final Four. I do still agree. I still think that. I still think that they are the most talented squad, the deepest squad. They've proven it, you know, time and time again throughout the year that, you know, that when they need to, you know, step up to the plate, they are almost unbeatable. But it's just that Nuggets team really, again, like you said, outside of Jokic, you weren't really getting a lot of adversity. The defense wasn't insane. The offense, what, like, they literally were beating the Thunder, and or the Thunder were beating the Nuggets in every single statistical category measurable on the court, and they still went to seven games. And that just worries me that there's something, you know, with their, you know, experience, their mental fortitude, that they're not able to pull through. And then you look at the Timberwolves, which, yes, 100% are the less talented team. They're not as deep. But they're dogs. Like, it's like the statistical nerd versus the that boy nice crowd. It's the battle is happening, because that's what this really is. Like, this is going to be a dogfight. Both teams defensively are, you know, there's going to be a lot of different looks they can throw at each other. Obviously, you know, Gobert, it's going to be interesting to see how he handles, trying to guard and stretch out. Like, someone's going to have to guard Chet. And I don't know if they're going to have to, you know, move like Naz Reid out there to try and cover him. Or, you know, Julius Randle, I guess, would be a good fit. You know, but and then on the other side of it, it's like, even if he gets stretched out, then, you know, you go down low, Julius Randle will put an absolute hole through Chet's chest. So it really seems like both teams can kind of counteract each other. I think this is going to be kind of up to the coaches to decide this one. I think that, you know, it's just going to be whoever can find the loophole in the other team's game plan that really sets the series apart and finds a way to, you know, pull out. But again, the Thunder having that for a home crowd, it's going to be nice. And then the last thing I'll say before I throw it over to you, this is the first game we're going to be getting. It's, you know, on Tuesday, a lot of you listening, that's games going on tonight. And that's a quick turnaround for the Thunder, who, like I said, just went through a grueling seven-game series. The Timberwolves have been chilling for the last 4 or 5 days, and they only had a five-game series before that in the first round. So they're pretty well rested. They're young. They're motivated. They're hungry. I could see them coming out gangbusters in game one.
Yeah, 100%. I agree. You know, it'll be the rest versus rust debate yet again, though, because, you know, the Thunder, if they're sort of hyped up on that competitiveness, you know, of that series, we've seen many times again, even though that team, you know, technically should be more worn out or worn down, the Timberwolves are coming in off of, like you said, two series that actually didn't get that competitive in the end. They won them both in five games. So, you know, we'll see, though, because if you do have a bit of a come down, if you're the Thunder, if you don't have your legs under you, you're just sort of exhausted.
And honestly, I want to put it out there. Like I said it when the Timberwolves had the first series, like the Lakers, I honestly think are better than the Nuggets. It's close.
I'd still give it to the Nuggets, but I do think it's close. I picked the Lakers to win the championship. Yeah. Everyone, play the applause again, Alex. It's don't do it. Oh, man, you guys are. Oh, there we go. Nice, Alex. You're a genius, man. You're a genius in the booth. Shout out, Alex. I think, you know, if you look at. I'm still considering this question because, again, the Lakers kind of tricked me and everyone. They look so fucking good towards the back half of that regular season.
Even the Warriors, if they're fully healthy, you think about that team compared to the Nuggets.
True. But I just think, so here's how I'm thinking about it. Like, I agree it could go either way. I would not, I'm struggling like to pick who's going to win this and in how many games. I'm definitely leaning Thunder. I'm like 99% sure that's who I'm going to go with. But it's not an easy pick because, like you said, like the Thunder, they were a little shaky in this one and a team they were far superior than talent wise on both ends of the floor, depth for sure. And even last year, like I think you can argue that they were the better team. They were the number one seed last year as well. They were the better team than Dallas, who they lost to in six. I picked Dallas in that series, but you know, a lot of things had to go right for Dallas. PJ Washington had to start shooting like fucking Reggie Miller for them to win that, and that was a six game series that came down to the end in game six there. That you know, if the Thunder pull that out, they go back home, then you never know. So you know, the Thunder, they've had some playoff battles as well, but you're looking at the Timberwolves, like they sneakily have sort of been through a lot of things as well, and you do, I think, give the experience edge by a little bit to them. Even just the totality of the team as well, because you're looking at Rudy Gobert, all the experience he's had, and Julius Randle, you know, prior to getting there, even DiVincenzo and Mike Conley as well. So it's close, but for me, I think that the Nuggets, weirdly, because of the championship DNA, because of how good Jokic was, and because of how much pressure he puts on you when he comes, when he's dribbling that ball up the court and he is able to, execute, you know, what Denver likes to do, you know, the pick and roll with Murray, the inverted pick and rolls, the way that, Jokic knows exactly where Gordon's going to be and how Porter's coming off screens and Brown's coming off screens. Like all of that was just so beautifully orchestrated. You can't say that about the Timberwolves defense, much of the time. The Timberwolves will, even against, like, you know, teams that they shouldn't have had a problem with, at least defending them and defending their actions in the Lakers and the depleted Warriors, looked like they were playing with their food a little bit too much in these past two rounds. Certainly in the past, through this past regular season and before, it's like the offense just falls apart inexplicably at times. A lot of the times it's when Mike Conley's not on the floor, and he can't be on the floor all the time. It, you know, sometimes Ant looks like he sort of just reverts to bad decision-making mode. You've got guys who sort of go cold from the field. We've seen that in these playoffs. The Timberwolves just flat out start missing threes, you know, wide open ones for almost no reason. And if you're putting that formula up against the Thunder's defense, the by far and away best defense in the NBA from basically start to finish this year, all through these playoffs as well. Like I think when you're looking at the Thunder, who like to dominate games defensively, that's their game plan. If they're looking at Minnesota versus Denver, I'd actually think they'd be like, okay, you know, I think coming off of a grueling series against a defending champion that knows what it takes, you know, not a defending champion, but, you know, from 2 years ago, champion who knows what it takes to sort of win this deep in the playoffs. I think the Timberwolves, you know, we can sort of handle that. Now, on the other hand, that Denver obviously had no one like Anthony Edwards, who could break almost any defense down, and no one can really guard him one-on-one. And so as good as the Thunder defense is, like, and as good as Lu Dort is, as good as Caruso is, like, I think Ant is going to get his numbers, but so, you know, you've got to take that into account as well. But I think from the Thunder perspective, they're thinking, we actually just slayed our Goliath, our behemoth here. I think I don't think the Timberwolves are going to be what sort of stops us, this 68 win team juggernaut that feels like they've been destined for the finals all year from getting to our final spot. I actually think in their mind and possibly in reality, Denver was actually a tougher opponent, even though I fully agree the Timberwolves are a better balanced, better built, deeper team than the Nuggets, 100%. They're not quite as polished for me, especially offensively. And when you're looking at the weak links that the Timberwolves have sort of on both ends of the court, like if you want to think about a team that has the ability to get Rudy Gobert off of the court and be a non-factor in the series, it's the Timberwolves, because they can play big with him. They can match up pretty well if they have to. But if they're going, if they choose to go small and it's working, even with Chet or Jalen Williams, that's wing Jalen Williams even playing up, you know, at the five, if they want to go super small, they have all this optionality sort of at every stage. And I think they're going to be able to find the combination to sort of neutralize Rudy Gobert. Then that interior defense of the Wolves kind of falls apart a little bit. And then, you know, SGA gets going. So I still sort of am putting this in a bit of a toss up category, but I've made my final decision now talking through it. I'm taking the Thunder in this one. I'll wait to hear. I'm going to sort of pass the baton to you, Matt, to hear your game's prediction first before I give mine. But I maybe I'm giving the Nuggets too much respect, and it was the Thunder kind of being shaky, you know, in that series. But I really do think from an execution standpoint, the Nuggets were just on a different level. I don't think the Thunder are going to struggle quite as much with the Timberwolves.
Well, when I think of this series, you know, especially, you know, just like if we're talking, you know, I was bringing up the fact that, yeah, the Thunder struggled a little bit against a Nuggets team that I really don't think they should have had as much adversity against. But on the other side of it, like I said, the Timberwolves, they did somewhat cakewalk their way through the first two rounds. But they were competitive. It was still a competitive series. Like the Lakers were right in it for multiple games there in that five game series. Were they the better team? No, hell no. But they were competitive. There was a very few blowouts in that one. Same with the Warriors series, even without Steph Curry, things were, you know, there were some tight games there down the stretch. So when I look at it, my biggest kind of, you know, I guess, idea of where I think that is like the X factor, the deciding factor of the series will go down. Like you said, Anthony Edwards will get his numbers. I kind of think that this is a bit of a trap series for Anthony Edwards. And again, he's one of my favorite players in the league right now, active, if not my favorite player in the league. But he does still have some limitations. He's still young. He's still kind of figuring out how to polish his game at the, you know, the highest level. And you're going up against, you know, the first two rounds, like the Lakers, you went up against one of the absolute worst defenses in the NBA, especially when you're talking about perimeter defenses. Then you go up against the Warriors that were completely depleted. Like Gary Payton the second is your best, you know, defender on the perimeter. Like, yeah, okay, that was nothing. Or you want to throw a 36-year-old Jimmy Butler at him that he just cooked. There's been nobody that's been a legitimate defender that you can throw at Ant so far. And now you're going to, like you said, have Caruso, have Lou Dort, have SGA even. Like, you've got four or five legitimate defenders, and not just good ISO defenders, but Cason really
Wallace.
Smart.
I think Cason Wallace could do well on him too.
100%. But you've got a lot of, you know, good defenders that can play ISO ball with them. But you've also got, like I've said throughout the year, the reason that they're so good is because they're a team defense first. Yep. It's not, you know, guys know where to rotate. Guys know where they can cheat. Guys know where they can go and help. They know where other people are on the courts. So they know that they can space themselves in a safe way without, you know, completely blowing a coverage. So for that reason, I do think Anthony Edwards will struggle, especially early on in this series. It's going to be a huge adjustment for him. Like, he's pretty much been able to walk on water whenever the ball's been in his hands so far this playoffs, and now he's really going to have to fucking work for it. And I think he's up for the challenge. I think if there's anybody in the league right now that could, you know, go off and, you know, have a couple of 30-point performances against this team from the perimeter, it's probably Anthony Edwards. But even with that, I think he's going to have a tough time, and, you know, there's just too many bucket getters, two-way players on the Thunder compared to, you know, the Timberwolves, where you're going to be expecting, you know, Jaden McDaniels to have some solid scoring nights. Like, you really are going to rely on him or Mike Conley. Dante DiVincenzo hasn't really been consistent enough for me throughout this playoffs, or really the season, for me to have total full faith in him either. Whereas, you know, again, there's just so many weapons at the disposal here, Mark Dagnall and the Thunder, that I think in the end, It'll be back and forth. The Timberwolves aren't going to roll over. I still think it's going to be a competitive series, but I think there might even be a few blowouts, in favor of the Thunder throughout the series as the Timberwolves kind of fight their way through. And, in my heart, the Timberwolves have really been my Western Conference team for like a yep. couple of years now. I mean, if you even want to go even farther back, the days of Andrew Wiggins, that's probably how this all started. Yes. But I think I have to, go with my gut here, go with my brain, and I'm going to stick with, my prediction coming into this playoffs. A slight change from my predictions for the offseason, the preseason. I'm going with the Thunder in six games to punch their ticket to the NBA Finals. Again, I think it's going to be an awesome one. I'm hoping for some really exciting games, some great moments between these two young teams. I just think that when you look at these two teams as a whole, the Thunder are just on another level, and that's really not a knock on the Timberwolves. It's just the Thunder are that good. They're that deep. But again, if Anthony Edwards can go off the way he was, and maybe you see another streaky performance from Jalen Williams or Chet, like we saw against Denver, exactly. and Julius Randle can continue being this like triple double power forward threat, things could get dicey. Like you said, it's still very much up for grabs, but I'm going with Thunder in six is my official prediction.
Yeah, and that's what I sort of, I know six isn't the max that a series can go to, but you can have really, really close six-game series that are sort of in the, they can be a toss-up, and sort of that's where my brain initially went to. But like you just said, that's the thing. I mean, I have no doubt in my mind the Thunder defense is going to be dominant. They're going to lock shit down, and I fully agree that this is a bit of a trap for Anthony Edwards, because if he starts going like, oh, Lou Dort, I can score on him. Alex Caruso, you're going to filter. I can score on him. Next thing you look up, the Thunder are up 12 late in the freaking third quarter. And it's like, oh, yeah, Anthony Edwards, this was our game plan for you to just try and come at us, do it yourself. Mm-hmm. You might be somewhat efficient, sure. But if you're not getting other guys involved, we can lock everything else down. I think the Thunder would be thrilled if that's how it sort of plays out. But the thing with the Thunder on the other side is Jalen Williams still is very inconsistent. Like you said, Chet is still very inconsistent. We saw that throughout this whole Thunder series, which is a big reason why they didn't wrap that one up much earlier on. Like that's the reason why that series was extended. Cause if you're comparing defenses, there's really no comparison between the Nuggets and the Thunder, but offensively they were just shaky enough for the Nuggets to get three wins there. So I can honestly see a similar thing happening in this one, where it's kind of goes back and forth. I agree there could be some blowouts in the Thunder if they're going and the Wolves sort of pack it in, especially on the road in OKC. I could see that just being super lopsided. But then going into Minnesota, that's a very tough place to play as well. And if your guys are kind of shaking in their boots as well, shaking in their boots like under that sort of environment, you can have as good of a defense as you want. If Jalen Williams and Chet, those guys, if they're not hitting shots, then the Wolves, have a good chance, especially in a close game, to sort of do their thing, get their shots for Reed and these other guys, three pointers, if they get open ones or Anthony Edwards going to the basket, like they've got ways that they can sort of, better offense beats, good defense type of shit. If these games are close at the end, and the Thunder, I just foresee them in some of these games opening the door for that, because they're just not playing well offensively, well enough offensively themselves. So I want to say six as well, but I'm just going to say seven.
I want it to go seven.
Going to pick the Thunder. Yeah. And I'm hoping for another, barn burner of a series. And I think, If this one goes seven, I don't necessarily imagine it being a blowout like this game seven was, at home. Obviously, the Thunder have home court advantage, from the start of the series or of the playoffs. Any series they're in, they're going to have home court. Game seven in front of those fans, like I think that's going to help them like it did in this last round. But I don't think they're going to be able to fully run the Wolves off the court if they get that far. Because, again, if you're talking about like depth, the Thunder might go eight deep, but the Wolves go eight deep pretty much themselves as well, if not seven. They've got a good bench between Reed, Nikhil Alexander-Walker, and Dante. So, I'm going seven. I think it'll be a lot closer, but I think the Thunder would have just enough to pull it out and make it to the finals. Which, we're about to preview the East, but the Thunder to me at this point, are the only team that it makes sense to go to the finals and win. Otherwise, this will be pretty unprecedented. Like the Timberwolves, as great as they are, and you know they made the conference finals last year. I understand they've got a rising superstar. They're not like your typical championship team, given how their season played out. They were the fucking seventh seed, for God's sake. Like they or sixth seed, sorry. But still, like very rarely do we see seeds that low actually go on and make the championship or win the title. Rarely
I don't know. Knicks. I think the lowest seed that's ever won was like a four or something.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I don't, it may never have been done. When was the last time, if the Knicks somehow win the motherfucking title, when was the last time a team won the championship after losing completely full out for the top three teams in the league in the regular season? They didn't have a single win against the Thunder, Cavs, or Celtics. That's got to be at least somewhat unprecedented. And then the Pacers, like that's, again, I got to come up with some stat that, you know, some reason why it wouldn't make sense for them to win. But like, that's not, no one was picking the Pacers to win the finals either at the start of the regular season or the playoffs. So it's just this final four is really crazy that, mm-hmm. and you're looking through it. Like we said at the outset, like this is going to be a new champion no matter what. And a sort of anointing of a new young player that we weren't expecting, because all of these guys seem to, you know, be at least somewhat ahead of schedule in terms of actually winning the whole damn thing. But when you look at it, like, and I'm trying to make a determination even in this series, the, you know, Wolves Thunder, it's like the Thunder statistically and from a regular season record standpoint, they make sense. A 68 win team is supposed to go and win the title. So mm-hmm. I'm going to lean on that and say they're going to edge this one out in a seventh game.
Hey, but if there's anyone out there that knows SGA's game, I can lock him down. Who knows it better than his cousin? His guy, he said himself like a brother to him. Nikhil, that's going to be an assignment. I guarantee it. That's going to be interesting to see. But the big dogs rolling with the Thunder here in the conference finals, but looking for a good series here between the T-Wolves and the Thunder. Moving on over to the East. Don't really need to recap. I don't think that game six over there from MSG, but nope. Knicks punching their tickets, like we said, to the conference finals. Absolutely dog shit kicking. The Boston Celtics, you know, obviously no Jason Tatum there. Maybe you were right, Jordan, that they gave them a pity party win there in TD Garden, and then just went back to the you know, MSG and just absolutely rocked them. Wasn't close start to finish. I mean, we said it a little bit in the last one. The Celtics next season, I mean, it's crazy to see how quickly they could kind of be falling off, because you know you got Jaylen Brown, you got Derek White, you got Jrue Holiday, you know, that big three.
Tingus.
What are they going to be doing next year in the regular season? How are they going to be good enough to still be in the top three of the East when you see the Knicks and the Pacers and some of these other squads that are, you know, kind of coming up? The Pistons, I think, will be another team to watch. Even the Raptors, I really don't mean that ironically either. Like, genuinely will be, you know, a competitive
when we
squad.
Trade for Giannis, we're going to be right in there.
Yes, but it's going to be tough because they're not going to have Tatum for at least the first half of the season, if not longer, next year. And then you again, Porzingis, who knows what the hell is going to, the outlook of his career is going to look like. He only was able to play 11 minutes in this one with his various illnesses and injuries. And even last year when they won the title, he was barely able to play because he had that weird foot injury. Like, he is a walking Band-Aid out there. It's just,
but can I just say, Matt, say while we're on this quickly, that should not, I don't want to hear any Celtics fans complaining about that. That is a big reason why New York moved off of him. I mean, that was very, very early on when he was dealing with, you know, injury things. And it was also sort of the politics of it all. But, you know, New York, between that and Dallas and then you know, his stint with the Wizards, like this whole like issue with Porzingis and whether or not, you know, he can be a good player on a good team, a contributing player, is the question of can he stay on the court? So when you traded for him, you have to take that. And so I've heard this like, oh, you know, if we had Porzingis, we would have done this. That's what you get. You had a known injury prone guy. Now, I'm not saying I knew he was going to have this ghost illness that no one even, I don't know what the name of it is, but there's been other things. Like you said, last year, it was a lower body sort of foot thing. That is what you get when you trade for a guy like that. And it shouldn't be a surprise to any Celtics fans out there trying to use that as an excuse. Just want to say that.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%. No excuses to be made there. But let's talk about the series here, Jordan. We got a rematch from one of the most heated rivalries of the early 2000s, the New York Knicks and the Indiana Pacers. Knicks holding the home court advantage here, which is a little bit funny as the 3 seed in the conference finals, taking on the 4 seeded Pacers. Very interesting, this series, the way that they kind of match up. Like, to me, it's going to be a real clash of styles, because obviously that Knicks lineup, they rely so heavily on the starting five, you know, the top minutes getters in the NBA as a whole, with OG, Josh Hart, Kat, Jalen Brunson, and Mikal Bridges. Those guys are run ragged all year long. And we'll see, they can match up with the super deep, super versatile Pacers squad that run 11 guys some games regular rotational minutes. Like, it's just going to be, can the Knicks, with their, superior top-level talent, best the Pacers and their depth? And again, they're not short on talent either. Nope. So it's really going to be a clash of styles in that sense. But when we watch this one, man, this is going to be really fun. It's two really great offensive teams, two teams that like to, push the pace, high tempo, sport guys who can get it done on both sides of the floor. It's really going to be a game of, who can really just go out there and get buckets, create shots for themselves. It's tough. I flip-flopped my prediction on this series quite a bit. And even as we're talking about it right now,
very tough.
There's a lot of factors to kind of go into this one. Like, I wouldn't say I trust either of these teams at this stage.
No.
Like, that's the thing. It's crazy that one of these teams is going to the finals.
These teams are in the conference finals.
Yeah.
It's insane.
Like, the Pacers looked great against the Cavs, obviously. And, like, Tyrese Haliburton had these amazing performances. But then he also had a couple games where he was kind of invisible. He had some games where he looked shaky. Pascal Siakam, same thing. And so he's been here. He's performed. He's hit game-winning shots in the goddamn NBA Finals. And still, I don't trust him. Like, I've seen him perform.
No.
I've seen him do it.
Hell no.
But we just don't know if we can trust him.
But guess who else?
Yeah.
You don't trust OG.
Yeah, OG. I mean, fucking, I don't really like, Josh Hart, and even Jalen Brunson at times has had some whack
games. Mikal Bridges,
like,
I don't trust that.
Mikal Bridges, you can't trust at all. I wasn't even really thinking about him offensively. My God. But yeah, this is a series where it's like, they got to bring their best, and they've got to be dialed in, because it really could come down to one of these teams beating themselves more than letting the other team beat them. And that's scary to me.
100%. Yeah. And that's why I can't believe these two teams are in the conference finals. Like, we said at the beginning of the playoffs, and I think most people agreed, we would be shocked if it wasn't the Celtics and the Cavs in the conference finals. And here, both those teams in the second round lose their series. I mean, injuries played a massive part of both of those series, obviously. And it, were it not for injuries, it could, you could say maybe that would have been what happened, that neither of these teams are here in this situation right now.
I'll give the Cavs more benefit of the doubt. I'm shitting on the Celtics one more time. You were losing even before Tatum went down. Porzingis was not really that big of an impact guy for you all season. I think the Knicks bested him in this one.
Yeah, and you lost two first games at home, for God's sake. I mean, I know the Cavs did as well, but injuries more of an issue for them early on in the series than the Celtics, who came in, relatively healthy at the start. But, like, 100%, I agree. Like, this is why it feels unprecedented, this Final Four. Like, neither of these two teams are a finals team to me, really. These are like, they've already reached these are two teams that are at their ceiling, but one of them has to fucking win and exceed their ceiling just by default. And yeah, I really don't know what's going to happen, because, like you said, the Knicks have home court advantage. We'll see at which point whether that's a real advantage for them, or if the pressure of that crowd sort of gets to them, if they're behind and the Pacers come in and steal one, how sort of demoralizing that's going to be for the Knicks, because, like these other great buildings we've seen in sports, even fucking with the Leafs last night, if you get the fans sort of turning on you, or you don't perform to the level that they expect, it becomes sort of, can turn negative potentially. You do have the home court advantage. The Knicks sort of worked for that all year. And I think on the whole, that's a good thing for them to have. That's obviously what they want. But then, like you said, the Pacers, you give them the depth advantage for sure. You're kind of, to me, it's a bit of a push and pull and almost a tie when you're looking at playoff experience. Like, the Knicks, I think a lot of people would say, oh, they're the more experienced team potentially. Jalen Brunson had his stint playing with the Mavs in the playoffs. You have Kat with playoff experience. You obviously have OG with playoff experience. But, like, none of those guys have really, really been there before, like as like a top dog, like consistently. Like Cat had one deep run last year. Jalen Brunson, yes, he's gotten to the second round here with the Knicks before. But you know, when he, but before that stint, like he was with the Mavs. He wasn't relied on that much, you know, to be the top dog. And you're looking at Mikal Bridges. Sure, he got to the finals with the, you know, the Suns obviously as well. But once again, he wasn't relied on that much. So
he was a fucking 3-and-D guy. Like it was like, yeah, he was, it was like, look at this young spry fella. Like he's going to really maybe be something one day, which like, he's marginally better sort than he was then.
Yes, yes. Yeah, so
not,
it's like,
not an insult. Yeah. He's still a good player, no, but
he's
not a fucking all-star.
No, and you know, respect to him for those two almost identical defensive stops there first couple wins against the Celtics. But like this whole, I'm sort of getting the sense that people are going to think that the Knicks have more sort of experience than the Pacers. I don't think that's necessarily true. Like you said, Pascal's been there. Miles Turner has consistently been in the playoffs, you know, many, many times. And this squad, basically as a almost unchanged group, was in the conference finals last year. You know, they went up against and put up a good fight against, you know, the Celtics. Obviously they got swept, but they won two rounds last year and they beat the Knicks last year. Again, I know it was the the skeletal fucking sack of the Knicks at that point, with guys going down left and right. But still they went into MSG and won a game 7 last year. So like, just, I think this is just so even in sort of, you know, in different ways that each team has sort of things that outweigh, you know, the other one in different aspects of the game. But when you add them all up, it's, you know, it's coming out to pretty damn even when I'm sort of examining this. Like, I don't know, do I give the Knicks that edge because of the home court advantage, or do I give, you know, the Pacers with the depth edge? I mean, we've seen how important depth is all year, more and more in this NBA. Depth is king. You need depth to be able to win. And if you're talking about like injury risk, the Knicks can't afford to have anyone go down. The Pacers, they maybe can, depending on who it is, they can maybe cobble things together and be able to, you know, still put a good product out there. So it's really fucking close. I mean, more than anything, though, just as a fan, this is a fucking I'm so excited about this series. Not only is it a rematch from last year, but like you said, this is a rematch from two historical rivals. You're going to get Spike Lee in the first row of Bankers Life Fieldhouse or whatever.
You better have some old jackets that he wore back then. Yeah. He can bust out. That would be nice.
You're going to have Reggie Miller sitting on the fucking in the TNT booth calling these games. Like, this is just going to be so much fun. These are two rabid fan bases that know that if they can push their team over the line, they're going to be in the fucking NBA finals. Like, it's just the celebrities and MSG are just, you know, Chalamet is just going to bring a bigger and bigger entourage every fucking day here. The whole Kardashian crew is going to be, you know, courtside.
I got to watch Dune, man. He's making me a fan.
You haven't seen Dune?
Nope.
Come on, man. Alex, do not let him get away with it. Alex read Dune, which is impressive. Alex is
nerd.
A bit of a scholar. Yeah, nerd, but smart guy. But it's just the games and this series, I really hope it doesn't like turn into some sort of like, oh, back and forth blowouts. I hope we get really good hard nosed, like, because also the Knicks, they sort of, you know, they didn't get into it all that much with the Pistons, but you know, the Knicks, if someone's going to step to them, they've got guys who are going to, you know, start altercations or at least, be okay with having those. And the Pacers, even though they seem kind of like a team mostly full of kind of mild mannered guys, they've gone at it with the Bucks for the last 2 years, sort of seemingly out of nowhere. So I hope that the animosity kind of turns, and we get some, real intense, you know, face to face playoff moments. That'll be great. Close games. I just think that, I mean, to me, like I said, everything is so, sort of even when I'm looking at, what these teams bring to the table. I think Jalen Brunson and you know, OG for that matter too, and all the guys who got hurt in the series against the Pacers last year, Josh Hart, are really pissed about that. And I think they feel in their heart of hearts that they should have won that series and it should have been them against the Celtics in the conference finals last year, the team that they just vanquished. And now they don't even have to face the Cavs, which they would have had to go on the road for. They get to host the Pacers. I think that's going to push them over the edge. And if nothing else, I believe in Jalen Brunson to put the whole fucking city of New York on his back, go hit some clutch shots in clutch time. And I think the Knicks are going to do it. But I think it's going to, It's going to be 6 or 7. That's my prediction.
Yeah, it's really tough. But in my heart and my soul, I have to stick to what I've lived my, you know, predictions and analysis on this podcast since the Tibbs era began, that a Tom Thibodeau team will never fucking win a title because they will eventually fall apart. Their bodies will break down. They have held up surprisingly well so far this season, even the regular year, and now even through the playoffs, they've been fine. I hope that it's a healthy 7-game series. You know, we see both teams get their best out there.
No injuries, please, God. Yeah, please,
don't want to see any of that shit. But I just don't feel like, even if it's not injuries, I feel like the gas tank for some of these guys might start to wear out. And I think we saw a little bit of it at times with some individual players throughout the, you know, this playoffs. It's just a lot of a load to bear. And I feel like the Pacers, with that increased depth that they have, that they can throw so many fresh legs at them and just push them and push them and push them and push them. Like that, the first two games, it might not bother the Knicks that much. But then you get the games 3, games 4 on the road, and they are just throwing all these guys out there that you're just adjusting. You have to, you know, on the fly, like, okay, this guy's coming in. I have to, you know, drop my coverage. I can't, you know, be going over the screen like I have because he's going to roll. He's going to yam on my head. Like, there's a lot of different things they're going to have to think about. It's going to be a lot more complicated for them to deal with that they haven't had to do this whole playoff run, really. And then on the other side, like the Pacers, I think actually relish being the villains. There's not a lot of teams, I think, that do. But I think agree. Tyrese Haliburton likes it. He likes the negativity. He fuels. He feeds off it. Siakam has been in this spot where everybody's saying, you know, you're an underdog. You have no chance. It's pretty much been his entire career. He's not going to back down. He's not going to wilt away in this moment. And then even the guy like Miles Turner, I feel like, you know, you match him and Kat up, very similar play styles, but I think that Kat might actually end up having a struggle against Miles Turner because he can follow him out of the paint. He can follow him inside the paint. And then on the other side,
you're Kat praising Miles Turner.
I think Miles Turner is going to have a really big
to my side.
Yeah. And dude, I mean, think about it. This is the longest tenured Pacer on that squad. You think he wants to get to the fucking finals finally? Like he's probably, he's itching to get there. So because of all these reasons, and it again, it just feels weird to say it, like, because again, I do think Jalen Brunson's the best player in the series. I think Kat probably is even, you know, you could make the argument the second best player in the series. But
depending on how he fucking plays. But
I think that I'm going Pacers in 7. I think they're going to shut down again. MSG. I think they're going to pull it out.
Oh my
I think
God.
They're going to find a way to do it. Oh,
the
dude,
Knicks
it
losing
be,
game
it
7,
would be a riot,
I think.
100%. Shit would be on the court. But I just think the Pacers are a little deeper and they can figure out ways that they can kind of make these guys uncomfortable. Like, it's just, if anything, again, even fucking like foul trouble. Like, if they just attack Jalen Brunson over and over and over, what are they going to do? Deuce McBride? Like, you're solid. You're a decent bench point guard, but or campaign. Like, they just have no one else that they can rely on, really. Like, Precious Achiuwa? Like, get real. Their bench is horrible. Outside of that starting five, they have nothing. So I really think that if the Pacers play this smart and they can just play their game and not fall into the, you know, the bright lights of New York, I do think it'll be a Pacers versus Thunder final. And that is a really weird thing to come out of my mouth.
It's very weird. And Adam Silver, I don't know how happy he'd be about
that. They'll have the 6'7" extension
markets.
Cord hanging from the ceiling.
Oh my God. But I mean, it's not crazy to think that in the least, because absolutely, if the Knicks start showing signs of, okay, like you said, injury or not, if it starts looking like we just can't perform at the same level that we can normally because our bodies won't let us, that is a full on huge possibility for this team that is pretty shallow, relies on their stars and that top five probably too heavily. I think the Pacers are just enough of a sort of potential mess themselves at times that I think the Knicks can scrape by, but I would not be surprised at all if the Pacers are able to win this series. I mean, we're both picking it going 7. I really hope that it does. If my predictions bear out, we've got 2 fucking game 7s in the conference finals, which would be great. I think this one is razor close. Again, to be reductive, I think also you can probably look at the points, assists, and shooting numbers between Brunson and Haliburton and whoever played better, whoever's better, you know, plus minus across the board, that mm-hmm. that team's going to win that game and probably that yeah. series. The more games they could stack up against each other, like these are two of the best young point guards in the league. They do it in pretty different ways, but equally as effective. I think a lot of the time, you know, Brunson has a bit more of the shot making star power, but when Halliburton gets everybody else going and he's hitting his threes himself, he looks like flat out one of the best players in the NBA. So it's going to come down to, you know, how well the top guys perform. You know, role players, as obviously as they always do, are going to play a big factor as well. It's crazy to me that, you know, in the West, if it's, you know, a Canadian is going to win, if a Western Conference team, a Canadian is going to get a ring. Well, actually, all
Pacers,
three, we've
got
the Knicks as well. Oh yeah. Shit. Yeah. Cause I've, that congrats to Canada. We're going to get a ring.
Wow, who's the but Canadian even, on the Knicks? Who am I forgetting?
I just counted OG as a Canadian. Fuck me.
Let's do it. Fuck it. Like, OG. It. Yeah. Okay. Oh, Canada's winning. Let's go.
Yeah, there we go. OG and Precious in my mind. I'm like, one of them's Canadian, right? Toronto, yeah. Right. There's no Canadian on the Knicks. Between Pacers, Thunder or Wolves for sure. But also the former Raptors in the Eastern Conference final is funny too, that either OG or Siakam is going back to the finals.
Right? PJ Tucker, if you really want to go deep.
Yes. Going back to the finals with a chance to win another ring, which will be crazy. But this one, I'm really curious to see what like other experts and pundits or whatever are saying about this series when predictions officially drop, because I really think this is like you could absolutely go either way. I could see it.
100%.
I'm really struggling with it. I think the power of friendship and the Pope's blessing will send the Knicks over the top. But you never know.
No, you can never underestimate the power of friendship. That's for sure. But as we kind of come to a close here, I do want to finish off by saying this. What playoff series, or I guess final series, would you like to see most out of like the possibilities?
Because would I like to see?
Yeah, because to me, it's like I'm going to go the inverse of what I think is going to happen. A Knicks versus Timberwolves finals after that trade in the offseason, that's the most juicy. Yep. That's the best. That's the best finals we could get. That's the best finals matchup. Yep. Entertainment wise, we could see, I think that's what I'd like to
see. I agree. I mean, I definitely think the Knicks in the finals, like New York will be a fucking zoo, like that whole scene will be
the atmosphere
crazy.
Would
like,
be cool just having them in it all,
super cool. So the Knicks for sure, and then probably the Wolves because of the Cat Randall, you know, if they're guarding each other in the finals, just mm-hmm. how insane that would be. The Thunder and Knicks too though would be good, I think. Just two great atmospheres, and it would be like, you know, one of, if not the, well, it's the biggest
market.
Blue
and orange versus orange and blue.
True. Yeah. Color schemes would be good, but you know, the massive market of New York versus one of the smallest markets of OKC, like that'd be a good storyline as well. But I think you're right. Knicks Wolves, which again is a very, very real possibility, would just 100%. Be insane a few months after that blockbuster trade. I'll say it again. I just can't get. I cannot believe that these are the four teams left standing. I just cannot believe it. It's crazy to me.
Well, that's NBA basketball for you. And stay tuned as I will try and stick with you guys and drop a couple episodes here while our good friend Jordan is on the
East. I'm going to text Matt. I'm going to text him my takes as things go. I'll just be sort of angry texting as, you know, in the middle of these games. So just communicate this to the people, Matt, please.
What's the name for it? The thing that people, a manifesto. I'll read Fleagle's playoff conference finals manifesto before every episode.
Yes.
And then give you my hottest takes that I can muster. But as we get into that, give us a follow at Big Dog Ball Talk, Instagram, TikTok, X, Facebook for all the old heads
email.
Out there. Give us your picks. Yeah, Gmail. Let us know. It's dry out in there. It's just all my DraftKings deposits. but let me know what you guys think is going to be the NBA Finals matchup. Give us your biggest predictions, takes, everything. How pissed are you if you're a Celtics fan or a Nuggets fan? How pissed are you? Let us know. Epic Go Ball Talk. Let's have events.
How pissed are you if you're a Leafs fan, which probably a lot of our listeners are. If you want to let that out, go ahead.
Yeah, well, you can throw it out there. We'll probably just have a little laugh. Ha ha, hee hee. and if you think I should see Dune, is it worth reading the book?
You should
and
absolutely
if so,
see
so, why
Dune.
Are you a nerd? Let us know at Big Dog Ball Talk. But until then, we'll be back after We've seen game ones. And again, I will be with Jordan's manifesto, and Jordan will be back for the NBA Finals, hopefully, as long as the East Coast lets him go.
Yes, I will.
But this is a big double talk. I'm going to go to Artificial. And as my good friend Jordan always says.
What would you like to bring me? What would you like me to bring you back, Matt? Would you like a little tiny pirate ship? I don't know what they do on the East Coast. I'm gonna find out. What do you want? A lobster, a live lobster? What do you want?
Yes, if you could. Yeah, that would be a challenge. I want you to keep that thing alive before you get here, and then we can boil his ass. I want you to bring him 100,000 kilometers, and we're gonna fucking boil his ass. But yeah, that would be nice. A little pirate ship in a bottle, something I could hang up right here. That'd be nice.
Yeah.
I'd even take a nice, unique seashell by the seashore. Maybe Sally or something.